Starwalker Studios presents GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the Strange.
Numenarian, and welcome to episode 50 of GM Intrusions, the podcast devoted to Numenera and the Strange. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Johnny Sharp joins me on the show today to discuss his experiences as a player and a GM. You've seen him run Numenera for the Dice Stormers on YouTube. So grab your dice and get ready to spend some effort. It's time for a GM Intrusion.
Opening segment.
Hello, listener. Welcome to episode 50 of GM Intrusions. Episode 50. Can you believe it? We're halfway to 100. And I don't know, I guess something special happens when you get to your 100th episode. That's what I've heard in podcasting circles. I don't know. My microphone will turn to gold or something. I don't know, but we'll have to see what happens. So I have an exciting show for you today. As I said at the top of the show, Johnny Sharp is going to be joining me in just a few minutes, and we're going to have a great interview. Johnny is fairly new to role-playing, so it will be really interesting to hear his perspective on Numenera and role-playing games. I want to thank everyone who's given me feedback on the most recent episode, episode 49, which was the fourth Obsidian Monolith episode. I've gotten a lot of great feedback about that episode. I think it might be the most feedback I've gotten on an episode since Nikki came on and interviewed me, which was, episode 30-something? I don't know. They're just flying by. But I really appreciate all the feedback, and I'm really glad that you guys are finding this useful, the Obsidian Monolith podcast, and I'm really glad that I was able to help some of you with your questions about how to run a game and how to prepare for a game and things like that. I was a little concerned about that episode because I had planned to talk more about the first adventure, but it did seem like that is a question that comes up a lot in the community, and I'm really glad it was well received. As far as what I've been up to this week, or the past week since the last time we spoke, I have run a session of Numenera online for Google+ for some new players, and I ran them through the Shadewalker adventure, which is the adventure that was put out for the Acid team, and it went really well, and everyone had a good time. Hopefully these guys will be playing Numenera more in the future, and I was really happy to do that, and it was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, my Asset team game that I was supposed to run here in Fort Wayne fell through. I only had one player show up, and we decided that it wouldn't be a real good showing of the system to just run with one player, so I hope that he is going to come to my next game I'm running in Fort Wayne for the Asset team, which is actually this weekend. So this Friday, I am running my playtest group for the Obsidian Monolith. And then Saturday, I'm doing an Asset team game here in Fort Wayne. So lots of gaming. This Thursday, which is actually tomorrow, I'm recording this late this week, I'm playing in Matt DeCray's Numenera game that he's running, and I am playing my character Cal, who is a Bothian nano who fuses mind and machine, and he is a blast to play. And with Gen Con and everything else going on, it's been a while since we've played that game, so I'm really looking forward to getting back in the saddle and playing Cal again. So that's pretty much what's going on with me in gaming. I've also, believe it or not, been doing a little reading in some other games. I've been trying to wrap my head around the Fate system. Not sure really what I think about that yet. I'm going to reserve judgment. I'm tempted to pass judgment, but I'm going to wait until I've actually run and or played it a couple times to see what I really think. But I have to say, when I read the Numenera book, I mean, it just clicked. I read that book once and I got it. The system made sense. I could already tell that I was going to enjoy it. And Fate is very different. It's not nearly as elegant of a system. And I really don't know, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try to run it and play it and see how it goes. I got the Mindjammer book, which I'm really excited about. Mindjammer, I really want to play it. It's a really cool setting, but it takes the Fate system, which is already kind of awkward, for lack of a better, I don't know if that's the right term, but it's not as clean of a system as a Cypher system to begin with. And then Mindjammer adds some layers of complexity on top of it. It's a very high workload system for the GM to begin with, and then Mindjammer adds even more. So I don't know if the system is going to work for me with that game, but I really like the setting. So if nothing else, I will gut it and insert the Cypher system into the holes left by ripping the Fate system out of it and have some fun with it that way. But we'll see. And I also got a Fate adventure slash setting called Secrets of Cats, which is really cool. It's a kind of silly, goofy, but fun looking adventure where you basically play cats, like house cats. They have magic powers. So it's pretty silly, but it looks like a lot of fun. And it's really cool how they took just the nature of cats and the way we all know cats are, and explained it through the lens of this new setting where cats are actually intelligent. And, well, cats are intelligent, but they're sentient, I guess, is what we would call it. Because, you know, we humans in our arrogance think that somehow our consciousness is better than other creatures. But anyway, that's a topic for another podcast. But it's kind of interesting how they show cat nature through this lens of cats having magic and protecting the humans while they sleep from all the supernatural things that go bump in the night. And the cool thing about it is it doesn't complicate Fate even more. And it looks like it will be a good way to try Fate out, take it for a test spin and have a little fun with it. So I'm trying to find some players to do that. It'll just be a little one shot. So if you're interested, let me know if you want to be a cat and try out Fate. And if you're someone who plays or runs Fate and you feel like you got a good handle on it and you'd like to try to help me wrap my head around it, feel free to reach out to me. I've already heard from one person and we might talk about it, but he's actually new to the system too. And I would really love to hear actually from a GM who has experience with this system and maybe can answer for me whether the issues I have with it are just me not understanding it or if they're actual issues. Be interesting to know. So anyway, enough about that. We are here to talk about the Cypher system. We're here to talk about Numenera and the Strange. And I have a great interview for you with Johnny Sharp. And so without further ado, here's Johnny.
GM Intrusions Roundtable.
Johnny Sharp is joining me on the show today, and you probably recognize Johnny from the Dice Stormers on YouTube. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Hello. Or should I say good day? It's a traditional Australian greeting.
Well, yeah, and it's morning for you, right? Right now?
Yeah, it's about 9 in the morning. Just had my coffee.
Awesome. It's 7 at night for me, so you're in the future. I always have to make that joke when I have someone from Australia on.
Yeah, we live in the future.
How is the future? Is everything still there tomorrow?
Everything looks pretty good today.
Awesome.
Lovely blue sky.
Awesome.
Spring morning. It's spring here as well. So, you know, we're six months in the future.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we're getting to the end of summer, beginning of fall for us.
Mm.
Very cool. Well, I know you and I have talked a little bit on email before this, so I know that you're actually fairly new to gaming. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was trying to work it out. I think I've probably been gaming for about 2.5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty new. So what got you into it?
Well, the Dice Stormers, really. So the guys that I play with, they're pretty much the only people I've ever played with. And they thought I'd be into it, so they invited me to come and check it out. That original game wasn't filmed. I'm sorry, that's not on YouTube.
Bummer.
But yeah, they invited me around and we had a game of Star Wars D6 and I loved it. So I said, I'll do that again. And they said, all right, can we set up some cameras?
So the first one you played was not on camera then?
No.
So you got a trial run first?
Yeah, and I think the idea to start filming our sessions actually came after that game, not before it. So at that point, I had no idea that any of this would happen. And then all of a sudden, we were on YouTube.
So what is that like, playing an RPG like this in front of a camera? What's that like?
I don't know. I think I've played so few games without a camera. It's hard to
to compare.
Yeah, I'm just used to it. It's just part of RPG for me. Is having a camera there. Yeah, I think I forget that it's there pretty quick. You know, right at the start of the session where we sort of speak to camera and introduce the game and introduce the characters, I'm pretty conscious of it. And then I'm just in the world of whatever we're playing, and I forget the cameras exist.
Yeah, I wonder about that because you guys have this perfect mix of you seem completely natural, like you don't even know the camera's there, but at the same time, and maybe this is done in editing, I don't know, but at the same time, there's no like dull bits or parts where you start talking about things that have nothing to do with anything. You guys only seem to be like in the game and on task, and it seems to me like that would be hard to do.
Well, yeah, I guess it is. So I suppose there's something in the back of your mind that you're conscious that there are cameras and there are people watching, and certainly none of that's very, very occasionally, you know, someone spills a drink and we lose 10 minutes mopping it up or something, we'll have an edit. But other than that, we don't edit anything out. We just try and stay disciplined and on task.
Wow, that's amazing. I don't have any experience with cameras, or at least being in front of them. I've been behind them before, but that's one thing I love about podcasting is no one can see me.
Yeah.
I very briefly thought about adding a video element to the podcast, and then I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Then people can see me, and I don't think it would enhance the show.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, five good-looking guys like us, of course we've got cameras, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing it's pre-recorded, so you don't have to, like, try to game over screaming women and everything. That would be rough.
Yeah.
So have you ever been out on the town or something and had someone recognize you from YouTube, or it's not that popular?
I haven't mostly. It seems a bit weird to me that we have as many subscribers and viewers as we do, because I've never met one. I mean, I'm talking to you now, but apart from that, I've never met one.
Okay.
Most of our viewers aren't in Australia, and those that are, I haven't run across, or at least not yet. Ben has, Murray has, Nathan has, but I haven't had that experience yet.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll happen one day, and it will be really weird.
Yeah. I sort of had that experience. I had one person when I was at Gen Con come up to me and recognize me from the show.
There you go.
So that was kind of cool, though. But, I mean, that was Gen Con. I mean, there were thousands of people there. So
yeah, certainly at a con, you'd expect someone to recognize me, but...
Right.
Not just walking down the street.
So what was the first game that you played with them then?
So yeah, it was Star Wars. D6 Star Wars we played.
Okay.
Which I loved. And I've since GM'd once, did a D6 Star Wars for old time's sake. It's a lovely system. It's pretty old, I think, but...
Okay, so you're playing the D6. Is that the West End Games one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Awesome. I used to play that when I was in high school. I loved it.
Yeah, it's so simple. Mm-hmm. It's sort of ridiculously simple to the extent that you can just kind of do whatever you want and bend the rules as far as you want.
Yeah.
It's very cinematic, sort of a system geared towards the survival of the PCs. So yes. You can do almost anything and you'll get away with it.
Yeah, I tried the one of the D20 versions of Star Wars, and I didn't like it nearly as much as the old D6 one. I played a Jedi in both of them, and I liked the way the D6, like the way they did the Jedi powers and everything. I don't think trying to jam it into a class system worked very well for me.
I've never played a Jedi in it.
What time period were you guys playing in?
I think somewhere sort of between episodes 4 and 5.
Oh, okay. I ran that game, like I said, in high school, and there's something in there somewhere like scale rules, right? Like if you're dealing with two things that are different scales, like a person versus a starfighter or something like that. And I hadn't seen those, or I didn't know how to use them. And I was running a game, and without the scale rules, my player took out a Star Destroyer with his X-Wing. And he did roll really well, but I was like, something's not right here. This should not be possible. And it turned out there was a very important rule that I had missed.
Must have just hit that ventilation.
Yeah, right.
Shot perfectly.
Yeah, exactly.
A 1 in a million shot.
So do you remember your first character that you played in that game? What your character was?
I think I just found a pre-gen and changed the name. Because I just had no idea what I was doing. So I wasn't going to create a character from scratch. You know, that sort of first gaming experience, I felt pretty out of my depth. Just sort of sat there at the table and had to be kind of prodded, Johnny, what do you think? You know? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it for a new player, is start with a pre-generated character. Because depending on the game, the character creation can be pretty involved. And sometimes it's the hardest part.
A bit daunting. Kind of
Yes. Well, you play Pathfinder now, right? And that's a pretty involved character creation.
Yeah.
So many options.
Now I'm building Pathfinder characters, you know, without any help. No training wheels.
Nice. Yeah, I've been watching your guys' Rise of the Rune Lords game and really enjoying that.
Oh, yeah, we're loving that.
Yeah, and if I remember right, you play a druid in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember your character's name, but I remember your companion's name is Gnarly.
Yeah.
The wolf. Because people like to make jokes about his name, so it sticks out in my mind.
Gnarly.
Yeah, no, which I get it. I get what Gnarly is supposed to be. You don't brush him often enough. I get it.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm curious, before you started playing with these guys, did you know what an RPG was, or did they have to completely, you know, explain what it even was, or did you already kind of know what it was?
Yeah, I mean, I had a vague understanding. I knew all the cliches, Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, nerds sitting in their parents' basement and rolling dice.
So you guys have the same cliches we do. That is really interesting.
We watch a lot of the same TV, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I'd seen the Community episode. I don't know if you've seen that.
Spoof
RPG. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had a little vague understanding, but certainly the art of it was something I had no idea about, because it just seemed, well, I mean, I think it depends who you play with, but the way we play it is so story and character heavy and so rules light. We get in trouble for that sometimes. So that aspect of it, that it's actually quite imaginative and creative and social, and that was a pleasant surprise.
So you say you get in trouble sometimes. That's something I've wondered about, because I've never, you know, been in an actual play before. Do you get like comments from people saying that's not how that works?
Kind of only thing? In Pathfinder.
Well, yeah, of course. I don't think anybody runs that game right. I don't think it's possible.
But there are a lot of people who think they do.
Unless you're a genius. Yeah, I tried to run that game for quite a while, and I never felt like I really had a handle on it. I always had to look stuff up. And
well, our problem is that we don't I think because the cameras are there and we want to keep it moving, we don't often look things up.
Right.
We kind of rely on Ben and his encyclopedic knowledge of the rule book.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ben's great at bluffing. And so if he doesn't know, he'll just pretend he does and we'll all believe him and we'll just carry on. And then someone will comment and say, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way.
Well, they're forgetting rule one. I think in D&D they called it rule one, which is that, you know, the GM can do whatever he wants. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. But I think, I mean, from what I've heard, a lot of people play Pathfinder because they love rules and systems and the mechanic of it. And the mechanic of it is wonderful and so,
right,
so well put together and so well balanced. And yep, I think they feel some kind of personal affront that we would come along and ruin something which to them is, you know, perfection.
Right.
And we make it imperfect by breaking it.
Right.
So I get that, but it's just not our style.
Yeah. Well, one thing that is really fun with that game is there are so many possibilities and options when you build your character. And, you know, I've had that happen before where I make a very specific character where I'm counting on a very specific, like, interaction of different roles to do what I want to do. And then I have a GM who doesn't do it by the book, and suddenly this thing I wanted to do doesn't work. And that can be frustrating. So I get it. But that's why you talk to your GM first, right? And you're like, yep, this is what I want to do. Is this going to work?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if you've noticed, but I quote you on the show every now and then.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. It was during your Numenera game, and now it escapes me what was going on. But you pulled a GM intrusion, and you said something along the lines of, it's a GM intrusion, I can do whatever the hell I want. And I literally almost fell out of my chair when you said that. I was laughing so hard. That was awesome.
Yep.
I was like, yeah, this guy gets it.
Yeah, yeah. Although I think in that game we basically had a, I don't know, I guess you could call it a player intrusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Towards the end where, you know, it wasn't me kind of heightening the drama. It was, I think it was John.
Yeah.
Said, I'm going to do this. Sort of like, you're going to die, but okay.
Yeah. Well, and now you've set a precedent because he's playing in one of my games now and he's trying those player intrusions on me.
Yeah.
It's like, can I do a player intrusion? And I think actually the one time he asked me, I said no. So next time I got to make sure I say yes.
Yeah, it was, you got to say yes.
Yeah. It was circumstances. It wasn't just that, you know, I didn't want to say yes, but yeah, next time I definitely have to say yes. So he's going to hear that and he's going to ask for something really out there.
Yeah.
So we talked about your playing experience. What was the first game you ran as a GM?
That I remember.
Okay.
That was Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, awesome.
I don't know if you've seen the game, but that one's on film. So my first ever,
nice,
first ever time GMing is on YouTube.
Film. Nice.
John gave it a great title, and now I can't remember the title he gave it. But yeah, so it's 1960s, which we kind of had to fudge a little bit.
Well, sure.
I had to fudge a little bit as GM, just to make it a little bit harder as my first time. I played a non-canon kind of setting. But yeah, the assassination of JFK, as retold by a bunch of Australians who can't do American accents to save our lives.
One of you, I can't remember who, though, one of you did a pretty good job. I think he was doing like a Texan accent, if I remember right.
Oh, it was probably Murray.
Yes, I think it was.
Murray's pretty good at that.
Yeah, and you guys were being very self-deprecating about your accents, and I'm not from Texas, but I thought it was pretty good. I wouldn't have known he was Australian if I didn't already know that. I was impressed.
Oh, there you go.
His American accent's a lot better than my Australian accent. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but you're not from Texas. Someone
no.
from Texas might,
yeah,
might disagree
true.
Strongly.
That's true. That's a very good point. So how did that go? How did you enjoy your first time in the captain's chair.
Ah, I loved it. It was exhilarating. trying to do about five different things at once while voicing a NPC. Thinking about what are they doing? How can I get this back on track?
Yeah.
How can I get the clues out? Because, you know, Cthulhu's all about the clues, all about solving the mystery. And you've got these kind of key clues that you need to feed the characters, but if they're not looking for them, you've got to find another way for them to discover it.
Yeah. So you enjoyed it?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I really loved it.
So what is it about, I'm assuming that you enjoy playing role-playing games. So what is it about them that you like, either as player or as GM, either or?
Yeah, I think in both respects, it's like storytelling. So I mean, I've written stories and plays and poetry and done creative writing, and that's kind of my background to gaming in a way. That and a bit of acting as well. And so the whole idea of telling a story, I just love that aspect. But there's something about gaming where you're telling a story that's only half formed in the GM's mind at the start and kind of comes to life organically. There's sort of a team of people putting it together, and it kind of takes on a life of its own and goes a slightly different direction to the way that anyone thought it would. And you get to the end and you go, that was epic. It was exciting. There was drama. There was intrigue. There was comedy. It's always a lot of comedy.
And
and most of that didn't exist in one person's mind. It was collected together by everyone adding their little bits and pieces, improvisational kind of storytelling. I just think that's great. It's exciting, and as a GM, you know, there's this sort of joy of watching this kind of the seed of an idea germinating and coming to life.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have a preference? Do you prefer to GM or play, or do you like them about the same?
I think I like them about the same. Yeah. Okay. I think as a player, I can kind of relax and just go along for the ride. And as a GM, it's a little bit more stressful, but there's something exciting about that kind of stress. So yeah. I think the reason I don't GM more is I just don't have time.
Yeah, right.
It takes me too long to prepare an adventure.
You then ran Numenera, and you took John had done a Numenera adventure for you guys, and you kind of picked up where he'd left off and came up with your own thing, which is super cool. So how was that? Did you find Numenera easier or harder to run than Cthulhu, or just different? Or what was your experience with that game?
Yeah, I think just different. They're both, I don't know, they're both quite simple systematically. It's not like running Pathfinder, which I could never do.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of both those systems. But I think what I loved about GMing Numenera was that it was just so easy to do things completely improvised. You know, there were moments, I won't spoil it, but there were moments in that game where I hadn't actually planned on a lot of stuff happening that happened. And I was making it up as I went along just as much as the players were. And to have a system, you know, where you can not just create an NPC for players to interact with socially. Most games you can do that without any preparation and just add a character and, you know, come up with it on the spot. But to be able to do anything with that NPC, to be able to kill that NPC and have combat and have weapons and all of that, you can just invent in the moment, just kind of go, right, well, it's probably going to be level 3 and bang, I've got all of their stats, everything ready and ready to go, which is awesome. So that really suits me because I like it to be kind of sandboxy and free and able to go off script a little bit and find something new somewhere, which I think is a lovely thing about Numenera, that it's such a sandbox.
Yeah, totally. I'm curious, do you have any, when you were coming up with that adventure, did you have anything that was kind of a source of inspiration or ideas for you, or did you just completely pull it out of the air? Because it was a pretty unique adventure.
It had been a long time coming, actually. So we'd played the very first time we played Numenera, and I thought it was great and said to John, you know, I'd love to GM Numenera sometime. And so at that point, kind of immediately after that game, I went home and started thinking about what I'd like to do if I was going to GM it. And so I had a couple of ideas then, and then about 6 months later, I actually finally got a chance to GM it.
Okay.
And by that point, we'd played it quite a few more times with John GMing, mm-hmm. and the characters and the plot of that series of adventures had progressed a long way, and I had to change a lot of things and reinvent a lot of things. And so there were sort of aspects of it. So the city of Sisuria was something I had from the beginning, and the idea that there was this missing person that John's character would be trying to find. The nature of who that person was and why he had to find them and so on had changed a lot by the time we got there. But that idea of bringing a new player character for John and immediately kind of put that player in the center stage as the impetus to take everyone else to this city was there from the start. And I think I'd lie in bed at night and explore the city in my mind. And I felt like I discovered a lot of the city before we played it. I kind of explored it creatively myself. And there's a lot of parts of the city that I know about that we didn't get to see as in the game. So it really was, you know, a sandbox adventure, because the players could have gone almost anywhere and I would have had something for them to discover there that I'd imagined beforehand. And so that meant that I could kind of go, here's a city, let's see what happens. You know, as long as you eventually, you know, get into the throne room and meet the king and sort out the actual, you know, the hook at the start has to have some kind of correspondence to the final showdown. But apart from that, they could do almost anything they wanted and go anywhere they wanted and meet anyone they wanted and just explore.
Yeah, and I think that was a great way to do it with a new player, is make their character kind of the center of that hook for that story. That's a great idea.
I had to talk a lot with John about his character and what he wanted to do with it and what I wanted to do with it.
Right.
You know, he didn't get complete open control of what kind of character he wanted to play. And actually, the character he initially wanted to play is almost the character that he's been playing with you, because I turned him down.
Yeah, it's a pretty out there character.
Yeah, too much weird.
Yeah, I will admit I nearly turned him down myself, but I was like, what the hell, you know? Why not? Yeah. Let's see how this goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Numenera, isn't it?
Yeah.
Too much weird is not really right, is it?
Right. Yeah, and it's definitely weird. And it's kind of interesting what you were saying about how you kind of imagined the city and kind of toured it in your mind, because I do some writing myself a lot more in the past than I do now, and that's when I was coming up with a story or coming up with an adventure to run in a game. That's what I would do too. Like, I would literally lay down on a couch or in my bed on my back and close my eyes and lay there not sleeping for an hour or more, just in my mind palace, as they say on Sherlock.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's what I do. I didn't have a cool name for it like that, but
it's a cool name.
It doesn't quite look like on the show, but that's basically what I do too. I picture it in my head, and then, you know, when I need to explain it to the players, then that's what I try to remember is you know, what I saw in my head and then describe that. So it's interesting that you do something similar, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So I don't want to spoil your adventure either. But I just have to ask, between just what happened in the adventure and then you guys had a little bit of discussion afterwards, I got the feeling that it really did not go the way you expected, the way they finally resolved things. Was that something you'd even conceived of as a possibility, or was that just completely out of nowhere? Because that's kind of how it seemed.
Yeah, no, completely out of nowhere. And I was sitting there going, this isn't what I thought would happen when they got, you know, and it's, you want, I don't know, I think it's the storyteller in me wants the most dramatic kind of climactic encounter right. to be that final encounter right at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And I think it was, but not because of me and not, you know, in my control. And I was sitting there going, how do I ratchet this up? You know, what's a good GM intrusion that I can kind of pull out in a moment like this to heighten the drama and make this the big moment it needs to be? And in the end, John made it the big moment it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I felt like a bit of a spectator in my own game, which is perfect, you know? And I love that. I love that about the Dice Stormers in general, that there's this kind of sense of everyone is going for the drama and the story, even if it puts their beloved character in mortal danger. There's a sort of a trust with the GM that I'm doing this for the story, so don't kill me. know? Which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's
hopefully
really
cool. It makes for good viewing.
I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a really cool ending. I thought it was a very Numenera ending, because it wasn't, you know, if I would have stopped halfway through and guessed, you know, five ways it could end, that wouldn't have been one of them, you know.
No.
which I think is awesome. Like Numenera to me, it's always kind of Twilight Zone, like things always take this weird turn and don't end up being what you thought they were, and I thought that was awesome, and I thought you did a great job, because I kind of guessed that they'd pulled something out that you didn't expect, just because it was just so out there what they did.
Yeah.
And I thought you did a great job, like, rolling with it. That was awesome. That's why I was so shocked when John told me that was one of your first times as a GM. I was like, what? He's a natural.
Well, I mean, I've been, you know, playing with John and Ben and Nathan and Murray, and pick up things from them and watch what they do and talk to them afterwards. And you know, it's good having four good coaches.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I've had John in my game for a little while now, and he is a joy to GM for, because he loves it when bad things happen. And
yeah.
I've never had a player that was like, oh, something bad is going to happen to my character? Awesome. And it's so much fun. And, you know, he kind of explained it to me, and I totally kind of, like, the light bulb went on, and I'm like, you know, you're totally right. It is a lot more fun when bad things happen, and, you know, your character gets to be, you know, the center of attention while this horrible thing is happening, which is a lot of fun.
we seek that out now as players.
Yeah.
And often the roles get reversed, and the GM is sweating, trying to work out how to save the characters from this terrible danger that they put themselves in, rather than the other way around, where the GM's, you know, trying to put the players in danger and the players are trying to find the way out.
Right, right.
Lovely kind of role reversal.
Yeah, and I think he kind of hit on it in my game. He chose a descriptor, clumsy, that's a, you know, quote unquote negative descriptor. And I think, you know, that's one thing really cool about this game is you have these descriptors that just make it so easy to do that. Like, there's foolish, or, you know, and you can grab a descriptor like that, and now you have a great reason to play this character that's going to do maybe not the greatest thing, but will be very entertaining.
Yeah, and as a GM, you know, says, all right, I'm going to fall over now. And you're sort of like, do you roll for that? Like, does it just happen? Like, normally you're trying to do something and you roll the dice to see if you succeed in doing something good. And right. when the player says, I want to do something bad, what do you do as a GM?
Well, in the words of Johnny Sharp, you do whatever the hell you want. Oh, I love that. That still cracks me up. You've played a few games now. Do you have a favorite so far?
I don't know. I don't think so. They're all so different to me in my mind. Yeah, and occasionally we'll only decide what we're playing a few hours before we play it.
Oh, really?
Usually when we do that, it's we basically did that the other day in a game that you haven't seen yet because it hasn't been edited.
Okay.
But we decided to play it, I think, a couple of days before we played, but none of us had any time to put any preparation in, almost no time to put any preparation in. And we just kind of turned up on the night and got our dice out, and John GM'd and just kind of made it up as he went along.
Awesome.
And so in those sorts of situations, it kind of takes me a while to get my head into gear and say, okay, so, right, what are we doing here? What are we playing? How does this work?
Right.
What's the system? What's the rules? What's the world like? What's the style? So yeah. To me, they all kind of sit separately in my mind. It's hard to have a favorite in that.
Yeah.
But I suppose if I had to choose, if you twisted my arm, I'd say Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
Just because the world, it's similar to Numenera. So I love Numenera as well. But the world of Cthulhu is just so freaky and strange, and you kind of have that, a game where your hit points are secondary to your sanity points.
Yeah.
Kind of says it all. Yeah. You're more worried about going insane than dying. Although you're pretty worried about both. To have these situations where even as a player, you're not sure what's real and what's imagined. And certainly having that sense of I'm weirded out or I'm horrified personally, even as a player. So how must my character be feeling? I really love that kind of horror aspect. Even though I'm not really into horror in movies, I love it in games. And I think Numenera lends itself to a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
I don't think we've quite gone there yet, but I'm sure we will. You know, when the strange becomes the terrifying.
Yeah. 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 They had a supplement that had some optional insanity rules, and I've been using that in one of my games I'm running. It's a published adventure, but it seemed perfect for that. It already had things in the adventure that were kind of horrifying and scary. So I decided just to kind of ratchet that up a little bit and throw in this insanity system and see what happens. Yeah. But it's been fun so far.
So yeah, I love both of those, and the way that there's so much, the whole game is geared towards unexpected, unexplainable things happening, and that sense of mystery and wonder I love.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Johnny, thank you so much for your time, and thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been awesome talking to you.
It's been my pleasure.
GM Intrusions Wrap Up.
Time to wrap up this, the 50th episode of GM Intrusions. Thank you again, Johnny, so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. If any of you would like to get a hold of me, you can email me at lexstarwalker@gmail.com. Please follow me on Twitter at lexstarwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1, that's 626-LEX-GMI-1, with any questions you might have about the Strange or Numenera or the Cypher system in general, suggestions for ANP or anything else you'd like me to talk about, or a GM intrusion. I am getting low on GM intrusions, and season 2 is coming up, and if I do not get an influx of GM intrusions before the beginning of season 2, I think I may retire the GM intrusion at the end of the show. Maybe it's getting tired. Maybe it's getting old. Maybe people don't care anymore. So if you like the GM intrusions at the end of the show and you'd like to see that stick around, then you can do your part by giving me a GM intrusion. And you can do that through the voicemail, or you can send me an email. You can also go to the website, starwalkerstudios.com/GM intrusions. All kinds of fun stuff there. You can find links to the GM Intrusions Facebook group, our forum, and the GM Intrusions Google Plus community. I really, really strongly suggest and request that you join the GM Intrusions Google Plus community. More and more, that's where I focus my outreach to you, the listener, and it's a great place to talk about the Cypher system and make some friends. I want to send out a huge thank you to a few people. for their 5-star reviews on iTunes, I would like to thank Kirk Shoulder Roll, Goth Pegasus, and Life Auger. Thank you so much for your very thoughtful and well-spoken reviews on iTunes. I really appreciate it. It really helps new listeners find the show. Thank you very much. So if you would like to support the show, that's a great way to do it. And a free way to do it, you can write a review on iTunes. Sorry, my phone's going off. Another great way to support the show is to become a patron. So you can find out more about that at patreon.com/GMintrusions. And there's also a link on the show notes. And another way you can support the show is you could sign up for a free trial of Audible audiobooks, courtesy of GM Intrusions. And you can learn more about that in the show notes. And the place where you sign up for that is audibletrial.com/GM Intrusions. And now for the perhaps soon disappearing intrusion of the week. This is another one from Sutherland Stotts. He sent me a few of them. And since I'm running out, I'm using the ones he sent me. So thank you so much, Sutherland. What a great listener and citizen you are, sir. So his intrusion that I'm using this week is that midway into a violent combat, a PC slips on the gore on the floor and loses an action. And that's it. That's the intrusion. And this is a great intrusion that I wanted to use for a few reasons. First of all, I've used this exact kind of thing in my game more than once. You can get a lot of mileage out of an intrusion like this. And the other thing is, I wonder if sometimes the reason that I don't get a lot of intrusions is because maybe people think, well, my intrusions aren't that great. You know, everybody gives these really awesome intrusions and they're so cool, and mine are just kind of run of the mill. And that's not true. Your intrusions are awesome. And I would love more quote unquote run of the mill intrusions, because we're not all like geniuses, right? We're not all poets. We're not all world-class writers. You know, your intrusion doesn't have to be a work of art to be helpful to someone else and to show yet another example of how you can use a GM intrusion in your game to get something done. And there's so many ways to use intrusions. So this intrusion right here that Sutherland gave us is a great intrusion to use when someone rolls a one. And a lot of times that's the hardest intrusions to come up with, because we don't necessarily plan for those ahead of time. And we tend to have to come up with them on the spur of the moment. So there's a great one you can use in your game. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you so much for supporting the show. I really appreciate it. And GM Intrusions is going to keep going strong for another 50 episodes. So once again, I am Lex Starwalker, and this has been a GM Intrusion.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality science, science fiction, and fantasy podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Ish, Cloudwalker, Renfield, and Transboy. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com.
I'm awesome! Thank you.
We'll be right back.